1 Kings chapter 10, beginning at verse 23. I think it's 1 Kings 10, beginning at 23. Am I right, John? Yeah. That's not the same. That's it? Yeah. Okay, I'll read from here just in case. King Solomon was greater in riches and wisdom than all the other kings of the earth. The whole world sought an audience with Solomon to hear the wisdom God had put in his heart. Year after year, everyone who came brought a gift: articles of silver and gold, robes, weapons and spices, and horses and mules. Solomon accumulated chariots and horses. He had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horses, which he kept in the chariot cities and also with him in Jerusalem. The king made silver as common in Jerusalem as stones, and cedar as plentiful as sycamore fig trees in the foothills. Solomon's horses were imported from Egypt and from Kew. The royal merchants purchased them from Kew at the current price. They imported a chariot from Egypt for 600 shekels of silver and a horse for 150. They also exported them to all the kings of the Hittites and of the Arameans. King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter: Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites. They were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, "You must not intermarry with them, because they will surely turn your hearts after other gods." Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. He had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. He followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely, as David his father had done. On a hill east of Jerusalem, Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable god of Moab, and for Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. He did the same for all his foreign wives who burned incense and offered sacrifices to their gods.
Well, evening all. I'm not sure I'm turned on. Okay. The gods of money, no, the perils, sorry, can't read my own title. The perils of money, sex, and power. I don't feel I'm on very loud, or is it just that I'm a bit deaf today? It might be. This is the end of our short series in the Book of 1 Kings, looking at the life of Solomon. And really what we've been trying to do the last these 4 weeks is to ask the question, does Solomon have a prosperous life? Does Solomon have a prosperous life? That's the question that's really given to us right at the start of his life. And where we left off last week, if you were here, is around about chapter 9, verse 10. And we see that really that kind of bookends, chapter 9, verse 10, kind of is a marker to say, right, that's the end of the beginning of Solomon's life. Okay, so it says, chapter 9, verse 10, at the end of 20 years, during which Solomon built all these buildings, the temple and his own palace and all this sort of thing. So now we're talking 20 years later. Okay, we know that he became king as a young man, maybe a late teenager. So we're looking now, he's probably in his late 30s, maybe his early 40s. And I guess for many people, for most people perhaps, maybe that's the kind of age that you really do start to prosper. You know, not. I think personally, my teenage years would. I hated being a teenager. Really, in your 20s, guys, it's pretty angsty, isn't it? Your 20s, you know. But by the time you get into your 30s or your 40s, I know it sounds like that's a horrible thought, but believe me, it is better. You're a bit more mature, you know, you've seen a bit more of life, things don't throw you quite so easily. You've hopefully matured a bit. And that's where Solomon is at this point. So what's he like? Well, on the surface, Solomon's a pretty spiritual man. If you've got your Bible open, chapter 9, verse 25, three times a year, it says, Solomon sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings on the altar he had built for the Lord, burning incense before the Lord with them, and so fulfilled the temple obligations. In other words, they had these three big festivals during the year, and so three times a year, Solomon does exactly what he should do. He goes to the temple, he does the sacrifices and all the sort of things that a good follower of God should do. All right, there's no implication in any of that he's doing anything wrong at all. He's doing the right thing. He's not on a hunting trip, he's not polishing his gold, he's there, he's in the temple, he's doing the right thing. Okay, he's walking in obedience to the Lord. And his dad David said, if you do that, you'll prosper. And that's what's happening. That's exactly what's happening. But get this, and someone read it for us a minute ago. You've only got to get to chapter 11, verse 9. And as Solomon grew older, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord. And we see that as he moves through his 30s, into his 40s, into his 50s, he starts to follow the Canaanite gods of his beloved wives. Ashtoreth, who's the goddess of sex and power. Or Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites, who demanded child sacrifice. You know, if you were here last week and saw the amazing stuff that Solomon was doing last time, this is horrific, isn't it? He even builds a temple, a high place for Chemosh and for Molech. He burns incense to these gods. And you think, why? Why? What has happened? You know, God, Yahweh, has given you all of this, Solomon. Everything you could possibly want, God has given to you. And what are you doing now? You're just throwing it back in his face. You think, if you were here last week, that was the high point in Israel's history. That was the very best the whole Old Testament. That was the pinnacle of the entire Old Testament we saw last week. And now, just like 20 years later, that same man who built the temple, that same man who did that amazing prayer that we very briefly looked at last week, that same man is sacrificing to Molech. The same man who experienced God's presence filling the temple. You know, in that cloud that was so thick and so heavy, so weighty cloud that even the priests in the temple couldn't carry on with the work they would normally do. That same man is now worshipping Molech. That's pretty serious, isn't it? I mean, if that doesn't make you a little bit scared tonight, then there's probably something wrong with you. So how does that happen in the space of one chapter or 20 years? Well, by my reckoning, it's money, sex, and power, as it is so many times in the Bible and in our own experience as well. Let's just take these one by one. If I can find 1 Kings again, that will be helpful. Let me explain money. All right, so how did Solomon get to be so rich? Let's just look at this very quickly. So the Israelites, David, his dad, did an amazing job in basically crushing all the opponents. Okay, so that region there, that red region on the screen, is basically quite a relatively small but very, very strategic place globally. Why? Because to the east, you've got Mesopotamia, which is modern-day Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, huge reserves of gold, minerals, all sorts of things. To the west, you've got... Oh, no, I'm going the wrong way on my clicker. There we go. To the west, you've got Europe. You've got Greece, Turkey, the Balkans, all that kind of area. And to the south, of course, you've got Africa. And he controlled that whole region. So all global trade, you know, it wasn't aeroplanes, was it? All global trade went through his territory. And so Solomon did very, very well for himself. The Israelites were landlubbers, basically. You won't find anything really in the Bible about Israelites going to sea, because they just didn't. However, the Phoenicians were a very well-known seafaring nation, big boats. Solomon partners up with a guy called Hiram, the king of the Phoenicians. So if you look in chapter 9, verse 27, King Solomon also built boats at Ezion-Geber, which is on the shore of the Red Sea. And Hiram, the king of the Phoenicians, sent his men, sailors who knew the sea, it says, to serve in the fleet with Solomon's men. So if, I haven't got a laser on this one, but it also meant that they controlled this sea channel here, which meant they could also trade with India and maybe down into the further parts of Africa as well. So chapter 10, verse 11, Hiram's ships brought gold from Ophir, which may well be a place in India, and Tarshish, which is almost certainly in Spain as well, 10, verse 22. And he's doing this great business importing and exporting as well. We read it in our reading, 10, verse 29. He's importing horses and chariots from Egypt and selling them on to other nations. And from all this trading, he's doing very, very well for himself. The weight of the gold, chapter 10, verse 24, the weight of the gold that Solomon received yearly was 666 talents. Now, you probably don't know what that is, so I'll tell you, it's 23 tons of gold. 23 tons of gold every year. That's a lot of gold. Today's prices, that's what, about £881 million. That's a little bit more than Elon Musk made last year, because I checked. Okay, so he's doing pretty well for himself. All right. So question, what is Solomon going to do with all this wealth? Because as Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So we want to find out where Solomon's heart is. Let's look at where he spends his money, shall we? Okay, so what he does, he kits out the temple very nicely, which is all fine. He also really decks out his man cave really nicely too. So if you look in chapter 10, verse 16 to 21, it describes some of the stuff that he bought just for his own pleasure. So it describes these 200 gold shields that he bought. I mean, if you think about it, a shield made out of gold, that's not really useful, is it? Because gold's very heavy. Like, you don't want to go into battle with a gold shield because it's soft and it's heavy. So it's decorative. He makes these 200 enormous gold shields, these 300 smaller ones as well. Describes his throne being made out of ivory, which, I mean, a throne made out of ivory is quite impressive. But then he overlays it with gold, so you can't even see the ivory. But just so you can say, I've got a throne made out of ivory. You can't see it, but trust me, it's there. You know, that's the sort of thing. And in front of his throne, he's got six steps going up to his throne with these gold lions and all this sort of thing. And you think, oh, what's the message? What's the message? When you walk into Solomon's throne room, what's the message? The message is, you are not worthy. You know, you've got to climb up steps to come and reach me. I'm higher than you. Doesn't matter how tall you might be, I'm always going to be higher than you are. Just think for a minute. Can you imagine Moses doing that? You know, or really, I know there are some Old Testament characters who would, but can you imagine Jesus doing that? You know, it's like, it just gives all the wrong messages, doesn't it? Some kind of pride has come in. 10 verse 21, all King Solomon's goblets were gold. All the household articles in the palace were pure gold. Household articles just means stuff. All your bits and pieces, all your cups and your saucers and your everything. Everything's just made out of gold. He's the kind of guy who had a solid gold toilet brush. You know, that's the kind of stuff that's going on here. And he's accumulating chariots and horses. He has to build cities to put his chariots in. 12,000, I mean, how many horses can one man need? He's got 12,000 of them. It's a bit like, I don't know if you saw the Saudi prince recently. Some Saudi prince imported came on holiday to London and brought 4 gold-plated Rolls Royces with him. It's like, you know, that's the kind of thing that Solomon's, that's what we're meant to think, I think, as we read this kind of account. This prosperity has corrupted him. The God-given gift has actually become his enemy. This has all gone to his head. I wonder if that's something that might be your downfall. I wonder if you're the kind of person who loves stuff. I wonder if you're the kind of person who loves comfort. He loves all the latest stuff. Jesus told the story, didn't he, of a man who had a barn, filled it full of good stuff, and then thought, I need to build a bigger barn, put more stuff in. And then he built a bigger barn to put more stuff in, and Jesus says, you fool, because tonight you're going to die. And then what will all your good stuff get you then? Well, maybe tonight your barn's pretty small, but you're always dreaming of a bigger one. I love this. I wish Solomon had written this proverb. It's one of the few in the book of Proverbs that isn't by him. It says this, God, give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I might have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Makes sense, doesn't it? If you've got everything like Solomon did, you think, well, I can do this. I'm powerful. I can do whatever I like. I don't need God anymore. Or don't give me too little, or I might become poor and steal, and then that dishonors your name as well. It's a great, great Bible verse. Highlight that one in your Bible if you've got a highlighter pen. Proverbs 30, 8 and 9. Money, stuff corrupted Solomon. Secondly, power. Chapter 10, verse 24, 25 says, the whole world sought audience with Solomon to hear the wisdom that God put in his heart. I mean, even if there's some hyperbole going on there, there's still a point being made. Year after year it carries on. Everyone who came brought a gift, articles of silver and gold and weapons and spices and horses and mules. And you got this idea that everybody, the whole world has heard about this Solomon guy and his amazing wisdom. And so he gets visitors from all over the world coming to see him. And you get an example of it, the Queen of Sheba, who comes from Ethiopia, comes to hear his wisdom, and she's really impressed. She's dead impressed with Solomon. She gives him 4 tons of gold as a parting gift, because she's pretty wealthy too. And you just think at that point, Solomon, again, he's prospering, isn't he? He's prospering. He's got all this gold coming in, all this. You know, people are idolizing him. People think he's amazing. They think he's wonderful. Is he prospering? Well, in a sense, yes, but is it in a good way? You know, if you imagine, it's hard for probably most of us to imagine having visitors coming vast distances to see you and hear what you've got to say, you know, and then saying lovely things about you. This is what she says to him. Queen of Sheba says this, chapter 10, verse 7. I did not believe these things until I came and saw with my own eyes. Indeed, not even one half was told me. In wisdom and wealth, you have far exceeded the report I heard. How happy your people must be, Solomon. How happy your officials who continually stand before you and hear your wisdom. Is that sucking up to him? It's pretty gushing, isn't it? It's pretty gushing. And just think what that does to a man's ego. Pretty hard to stay level-headed. Of course, the thing is that it's true, actually. It's true. He was the wisest man in the world. But it was his God-given gifting that was such a challenge to cope with. If by God's grace he's given you this evening some level of power, some degree of influence, Or if you've been gifted in some very obvious way, it's a great challenge to keep it in check. a great challenge to keep it in check. But you must. You must. Romans 12, verse 3 says, "Do not think of yourselves more highly than you ought, but rather with sober judgment." It's so, so easy to become inflated with pride, even pride in the gift that God has given to us. When what appalling idolatry is that, that God should give something to us and we should idolize the gift rather than the giver? But it is so easy to do. And this idea of power and pride is the downfall of so many good people. Because with power comes pride. Almost inevitably. It doesn't have to, but it's so, so easy. It's so easy when once you have power, once you have influence, to start feeling that you're above everybody else, because they give you accolades all the time. They tell you how great you are, how wonderful you are. Very, very bad for the soul. But you know what? I don't think pride was his downfall. It was a problem. Money was a problem. But it wasn't his downfall. I think his downfall was this. Famously, he loved women a lot. Chapter 11, verse 1, King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter. He'd been married to Pharaoh's daughter for a long time. I think it's chapter 3, verse something, right back at the beginning of the story. He marries this Egyptian woman. But what happens now, 20 years later, all the nations around that his dad David had conquered, now he wants to forge alliances with them. So he's marrying their princesses. Anyone who comes along, he seems to get married to them, which may be very astute politically, but again, bad for your soul. It says he had 700 wives of royal birth, married 700 princesses. I mean, that's going something, isn't it? I just let that number sink in for it. 700. That means you would, if you saw each one for half a day, it'd be like, that's right, yeah, it'd be a year before you saw the same one again, you know? That's just crazy, isn't it? 700 wives, and he still felt the need for a harem of 300. I mean, what's going on? And I can only think that something just went wrong early on with Solomon. You know, should he have married this Egyptian princess right back at the beginning? Actually, technically, it wasn't against God's law. God told them not to marry the Canaanites. But the Canaanites are the bad ones. Didn't actually say anything about the Egyptians at that point in the Bible story. But you've got to ask the question, is it wise? Is that, you know, he's supposed to be the wisest man on earth. Is it a good plan? Or was it just a little compromise? Maybe it's just a little compromise 20 years ago. But maybe you thought, well, but you know what? I'm doing all right. I'm blessed. You know, everything's going well. Everything's prospering. I'm doing really well in life. So maybe the Lord's fine with it. A terrible warning to us, isn't it? That things can be headed in a very, very bad direction while still feeling very blessed. Actually, my life is going well and I'm happy and I'm doing well in my job and my career, and I've got a new car and the house is looking nice and I've got nice kids, and so maybe the Lord doesn't mind quite so much about my secret pornography addiction or the fact that I'm scamming people at work or whatever else it is. Solomon is a seed planted there. And when the opportunity came, he takes another wife, and another, and another. And very slowly, they lead him astray, and he ends up worshipping other gods. And just, by the way, that's no criticism of them. It's not their fault. It's not their fault they're leading him astray. That's his fault. Okay? That's not their fault. But sin that isn't dealt with early on so easily entangles. You know, Hebrews 12:1 famously, yeah, you can read it, Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Solomon, perhaps more than anybody else in the whole Bible, is entangled. Because what can he do by this point, actually? What can he do? He's in a really difficult situation now. Very, very hard to get out of. He's entangled in all these really difficult, unhelpful relationships that are holding him back and turning his heart away from the Lord. Incredibly hard to get out of. I mean, trying to get out of one difficult relationship is hard enough, isn't it? And some of you know that. But like, he's got thousands of difficult relationships to get out of now. I wonder if there's something that's holding you back tonight. Something that's entangling you. I wonder if, like Solomon, it says his heart was not fully committed to the Lord anymore. Maybe there's something in your life that has entangled you up. And you know deep down that you're not fully committed to the Lord anymore. Now, that was Solomon's problem. And the problem is so many others who followed in his footsteps as well. It's so easy to get entangled in sin, and it is very difficult to get out of it again. So what do? You kill it quick. Kill it early on. Younger people especially. I know it seems hard to kill sin when you're young. Believe me, it's worth fighting while you're young. Some of you older ones will testify to things that habits that you have formed, patterns that have developed in your life over decades that you've never dealt with, and it just gets harder. And that, friends, is how Solomon went from walking with the Lord to walking with Molech in the space of 20 years. And it's desperately sad. What can we learn from him? There's lots of things we can learn from Solomon. I just want to give you one, though, really. And that is to take your dark side seriously. Take your dark side seriously. Don't underestimate the sinful nature. And however much of it remains in you, don't give it an inch. Don't give sin an inch. We probably all know of people who've made a catastrophic train wreck of their faith. I had a good friend. She was a keen Christian. She loved the Lord. She was a natural evangelist. But you know what? Her heart was never fully satisfied with the Lord, to be honest. And she had a string of unbelieving boyfriends, and it seemed like she was always searching for something and not finding it. And every time she ended up breaking up with a boyfriend, and she'd come back to the Lord, and everything would be great for a while, a few weeks, and then she'd get another boyfriend, and eventually one of them led her away, and she never came back. And that was 20 years ago. And I believe she's the Lord, and I believe she'll be back one day, because he doesn't let go of his people. But I tell you what, she's made a right mess of things. Solomon ended up in a place that he never saw coming. Do you think on that day that we saw last week, do you think Solomon could have possibly imagined what would have happened? Let's go from hero to this. Desperately sad. And just one little bonus verse. I found this. Moses, how long before was it? It would have been a few hundred years before, like 400 years before, I think. Moses said to the people, he said this, Deuteronomy 17. He says, one day you're going to have a king. Because they didn't have a king back then. Moses said to them, one day you're going to have a king. And when you have a king, make sure that they don't do these things, all right? Count them with me. Number one, the king must not acquire great numbers of horses for himself or make the people return to Egypt to get more of them. For the Lord has told you, you are not to go back that way. Okay? It's not good, is it? Number two, he must not take many wives or his heart will be led astray. Ooh. Number three, You must not accumulate large amounts of silver and gold. I don't think Solomon saw it coming, because I guess he didn't know that verse. And friends, tonight, let us take this as a warning to us. You know, not every sermon is meant to uplift us. Sometimes sermons are just meant to warn us. So I want to ask you, which of these is the most tempting to you? Money, sex, power? Don't give sin an inch. I'll finish with this, then we'll sing. Question: why does God allow Solomon to become so wealthy? Why does God allow all this to happen? You know, if this man is the wisest man that ever lived, why would God allow him to end so badly? Like if God knew that power and wealth and all this stuff would corrupt Solomon, why allow it? Well, the Bible doesn't tell us directly, but I'll tell you why I think. I think it's so that he would write the book of Ecclesiastes. Because I think the book of Ecclesiastes was written right at the end of his life. He's writing as an old man who's walked away from the Lord, who's worshipped Moloch, who's built an altar to Chemosh, who's had everything his heart desired. And he writes this book of Ecclesiastes, looking back at everything he's done, everything he's had, and saying, what a mess. What a mess I've made of my life. Let's give you one quote from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 2, verse 8. I amassed silver and gold for myself. I acquired male and female singers, entertainment, whatever I wanted, and a harem as well, entertainment of another kind. The delights of a man's heart, he says. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I don't think he's exaggerating. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. And yet, when I surveyed all that my hands had done, I looked at my life. When I looked at all that I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. The Hebrew word for meaningless just means, it's the word used for smoke. It's like vapor, something that looks solid when you look at it, but actually you put your hand through it and you can't grasp it. It just flies away. There's nothing there. He had everything, absolutely everything you could possibly want, and discovered it was nothing. And you or I could say, I could stand here and say that to you. I could stand here and preach this sermon to you, and you could say, yeah, but how do you know, Mason? You know, you've never tried it. maybe if you had a thousand women to live with, maybe that would make you happy. Or maybe or maybe you might say, well, you know what, if you had this Lamborghini you keep on talking about in sermons that you're going to wrap around the lamppost, maybe that would make you happy. You know what, I don't need to have any of those experiences. Solomon did. He had everything, absolutely everything you could possibly imagine, and more besides. He prospered, humanly speaking, in every possible way, in money and family and luxury and everything. And for that man to get to the end of his life and say, it was all nothing. True prosperity, true satisfaction, true fulfillment is only found in a relationship with God through Jesus. Let's pray, shall we? Father, thank you for the example of Solomon. Thank you for his good example in so many ways in the early part of his life. But Lord, as a good man who started well and made a mess of his spiritual life, Lord, please help us to take his example seriously. Help us to take sin seriously. Lord, help us to identify our own weaknesses. Help us to take up arms against ourselves, against our own sinful impulses. Help us to fight sin, to carry our own cross. And Lord, help us to remember that nothing else will satisfy. No one else can fill the aching hole that exists within the heart of man except you. And whatever seems to bring temporary relief to us, Lord, help us to reject it and run to Jesus and find in him our all in all. Amen.